This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, it's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting live from the WVUA FM studio, 90.7 The Capstone, on the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show. If you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students and, in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us live each week, every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can go online and listen to us at wvuafm.ua.edu, or you can also download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. I'm asking for questions like I always do each week via email. So if you have questions for myself or my guests, you can email those to us at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. Also, I always like to ask if you have ideas for future shows, either for the remainder of this semester or spring semester. I would love to hear your ideas. So email those. Again, the email is brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. And I'll try to remember to give out this email address throughout the broadcast. So if you think of a question, you can send those to us and we'll answer them live on the air. Tonight's show topic is so interesting, and I've been wanting to have this guest on ever since I found her, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I came across her name and her interest in the topic. But the topic tonight is changing the culture of mental health on campus. And working here on campus for about 15 years, I've seen a lot of changes, and I think working at the Counseling Center, we've done a lot of good work with regards to not only seeing students, but also marketing our services and helping to make students feel a little more comfortable coming to the Counseling Center, or normalizing, you know, mental health issues across campus. But it is still a struggle. Students know students better than anybody, and they turn to each other when struggling with health issues. They're also experts in the most effective strategies to engage their fellow students and create a campus culture and climate that fosters mental health, physical health, and even well-being. And in a recent research article, students on campuses where there was wide support for mental health issues were more than 20% more likely to receive mental health services and 60% more likely to do so on campus. And that was according to those findings. That was fascinating to me because, you know, we probably at the Counseling Center, there's 17 of us licensed professionals, and we see probably 5 to 6 students a day per week. You can add that up, and it's a lot of students. I don't really know the percentage of our student body who utilize the Counseling Center, but we have a large student body. We have about 40,000 in enrollment, so it's probably a smaller percentage than I would imagine. My guest tonight is a UA alumna who was very instrumental on this campus in helping to change the culture of mental health. Her name is Helmi Hinken. I hope that's pronounced.
You're good.
She excelled at the university and was involved with several mental health organizations she's going to talk about. She currently works as a mental health specialist at Brewer Ports Children's Center here at the University of Alabama. But the way I came across her name and her information about working with mental health services, I just really was Googling the topic because I was interested in how to change the culture of mental health and get more people to talk about it on campuses. And what came up was from Mental Health America. It's an organization that's exactly what it says, Mental Health America. And it was listing the 15 students across the country who have been instrumental in changing the culture on their campus. And Helmi was listed as one. It's an honor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for being on the show.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here.
I got your name right.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, now you've been on many shows. You've publicized many mental health issues. I'll say we were talking a little bit before the show about, you know, because I always ask people, have you ever been on radio? Because some people are nervous and whatnot. But tell the listeners a little bit about your background, where you're from, how you came to the University of Alabama, and how you got involved and why.
So my name's Holly Hankin. Like you said, I am currently a UA graduate. So my mental health involvements right now are working as a mental health worker at Brewer Porch. I'm on the board of directors for NAMI Alabama, as well as the Ending the Silence Program Coordinator and Connection Support Group Facilitator for NAMI Tuscaloosa. While on campus, I was president of NAMI UA, and I was on the JED Foundation Student Advisory Council, the Crisis Text Line Youth Advisory Council, and the council you mentioned, which was the inaugural Mental Health America Collegiate Mental Health Innovation Council.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot quite of involvement.
It's a mouthful.
And your major, I'm assuming you said, was psychology?
Yes. Yeah. I was a psychology and French major. I'm definitely interested in pursuing clinical mental health as a career in the future.
Tell us, you mentioned NAMI. What does that stand for?
NAMI stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's the largest grassroots mental health organization in the United States.
Yeah.
Our main focuses are support, education, and advocacy. Mm-hmm. So we have support groups. We have a family support group, connection support group, which is open to anybody 18 or older living with a mental health condition.
Yeah.
Some chapters have veteran support groups. We do a lot of advocacy work, so at the local, state, and national levels, we have state capital days, national capital days.
Wow.
For any sort of, you know, there was a piece of legislation recently that would have increased funding for research into the feasibility of making a 3-digit hotline number, kind of like 911 for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Yes.
That got passed, so we were part of promoting that, or various healthcare bills. And then, of course, education. So as the Ending the Silence Program Coordinator,
yes,
I go into high schools or even freshman college classes and kind of give them background on what mental health looks like, both good and bad, what symptoms of mental health conditions may look like, how to end the stigma, and also how to reach out for help for them, but also maybe how to talk to their friends about getting help as well.
How did you start getting interested in these organizations when you first came to UA?
Yeah.
Did you know you were going to do this?
Oh.
You know, was this like purpose in life kind of thing?
Yeah, I've always been passionate about mental health. I think part of it is my lived experience with mental health conditions.
Yes.
And another big part of it was I grew up right next to Stanford in California.
Palo Alto, yes.
Yes, absolutely. And so
we'll talk about a great restaurant there at the break. I want to get your opinion on it.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And so it was a understandably competitive academic atmosphere. It was just kind of a competition to be stressed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I failed that test. I got a 98%. Oh, you got 2 hours of sleep. Well, I got 30 minutes.
Exactly.
And so it was a very unhealthy environment to be in. And I feel like that contributed to just increased stress in students, increased development of mental health conditions in students, and an increased environment where they felt like they couldn't reach out to others. So
right.
We had an epidemic of suicide contagion.
Yes.
A lot of students would step in front of the train. And to this day, we have crossing guards at every railroad track to prevent that from happening. And so just growing up in that environment, I became passionate. And I think that's how I decided I wanted to do it as a career, because I felt like I wanted to be a resource for folks who maybe were feeling that way and needed somebody to talk to or reach out to.
You mentioned the JED Foundation. Can you talk about that a little bit for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah, so the JED Foundation specializes in collegiate mental health. They have various programs. Their biggest one right now is Seize the Awkward, which is kind of partnering with AFSP and other mental health organizations to talk about how to speak with people about mental health, because, you know, it is stigmatized.
Oh, yeah.
And can be awkward to talk about. Other things they do, they've done Love is Louder. I'm sure a lot of the listeners have maybe heard of that one. They do another thing called U Lifeline.
Yes.
UA has a...
We have a link to that.
Link to that. Yes,
website.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of informing you about mental health resources around you on campus, and also has a little screener quiz that you can take as well if you're worried about yourself or a friend.
I've actually had students to take... Well, they've taken several of the screenings we have
mm-hmm.
on our website, and they'll bring them in sometimes, and that helps us.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
You know, I mentioned that you were named in 2017 one of the 15 students changing the culture of mental health on campus by Mental Health America. Can you talk about the criteria for being selected?
I always apply to that kind of stuff just because I'm so passionate about it. And the various councils I've been on have been such a great learning experience for me. I mean, part of it is great to be able to give insight based on all of my experience and what I've learned but also learning from other student leaders. And I didn't know if I was going to be selected, but I think what got me selected is the scope of my work. I mean, yes, on campus, I was definitely a leader, but then just in the state and the state of Alabama.
For your age.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I earned the NAMI On Campus Leader Award in 2017 as well. So I guess they felt like I had a lot of input to give. And it was an awesome experience because there are people all over the country, schools big and small, right, learning about what the campus environment is like there and initiatives and events that they've held and talking about what it's like here and, you know, commiserating with people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is a constant struggle to fight the stigma. Mm-hmm. It really is, to fight trying to help people realize that it's okay to get help.
Absolutely.
You know, you're not crazy. I have people say that to me all the time. What about, you know, after being selected, did it bring attention to mental health issues on the UA campus?
Basically, the council, they're releasing this report. I'm not sure if they've already released it yet. So they each week, well, every once in a while, I forget how periodic it was, we would have these calls, and on these calls there would be a certain topic. So for example, mental health and disability services, yes, on campus. And so we talk about what the current state is, you know, I talk about ODS and mm-hmm. what it's like. I mean, I haven't searched for mental health disabilities, but my friends have, so what their experiences were like, and just talking about ways we could improve. And so I guess it brought attention in that way so other people could learn. And I don't know how much UA is mentioned in the report or is going to be mentioned in the report. But I think it was really awesome for me to think about these things. And at the time, it was right when Dr. Perez was brought on campus. Yeah. So, you know, thinking about things that I could bring to him as ideas to work on. If y'all don't know who Dr. Perez is, he's the new Associate Vice President for Student Health and Well-Being. And
he's actually going to be on my show in November. He's going to be on the show.
That's
in November,
awesome.
Right after Thanksgiving. Yeah,
that's
we're
awesome.
We're going to talk about the initiatives he has for student life and the well-being program that he's really encouraging everyone to take part in.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that. So that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, so.
Nice lead-in.
Right.
That was a nice lead-in. Did you have faculty support, like from your psych faculty members? Did you have support?
I mean, not particularly. Not
what?
That they weren't supportive, but
give names.
It was,
I'm kidding.
It was such an undergrad, you know, centric club. I did have support if I said, hey, can you promote this event, or
okay,
we wanted to do class wraps, or if we had events and sent into the professors, can you advertise this event or give extra credit,
right,
stuff like that. We didn't have too many faculty members. I mean, NAMI UA is open to faculty, grad students, or undergrads to give input or seek support. We didn't have too much of that. And in terms of advocacy, it was pretty difficult to participate in productive advocacy until Dr. Perez got around, because I feel like we didn't have good, strong admin connections.
That's right. And I want to ask you about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Another question. To that extent, did you have support of other mental health providers on campus, like the Counseling Center, the Psychology Clinic, the Women's Gender and Resource Center?
Yeah, I mean, we partner with the Counseling Center a lot for our mental health monologues.
Yeah.
The Counseling Center usually would speak.
I forgot about that, yes.
Yeah, sometimes we'd have Counseling Center come to meetings and speak. You know, we'd try and partner with WGRC or these other things for events, or SGA, for example.
Yes, yes.
Especially in recent years, they became more on top of mental health. Just in, I mean, it's UA Suicide Prevention Week right now, thanks to SGA.
I'm going
to
be honest with you. I think mental health has kind of become the sexy topic.
Oh, I completely 100%.
It has, but I don't know how, this is going to sound bad, but I don't know how sincere sometimes people are. You know, right before we went on the air,
yeah,
you said this, if you don't mind me saying.
Absolutely.
People say, in quotations, they care about mental health, but then they don't really take action.
I completely agree with you.
What is that?
I don't know, but I definitely agree with you that mental health is a topic that people they care about, but it becomes sort of a bandwagon topic that, yes, when there's a high profile suicide, people are sharing this suicide lifeline, but then they go back to not, you know, donating to these organizations or showing up to these walks or volunteering for NAMI or coming to NAMI
UA
meetings.
Unless you have it personally in your family.
Absolutely.
Then a lot of people don't have the passion.
It's harder to care. And, you know, there are very few young people involved in NAMI Tuscaloosa and NAMI Alabama. And I wish that would change because we are the future, and you know, we are the ones experiencing increased levels and rates of mental health conditions and suicide. So it's important for us to step up and share our lived experience and also fight for change and figure out what that change should look like.
What do you think, you know, is the biggest obstacle? That's I'm putting you on the spot. But what's the biggest obstacle for college students to not get help?
There's a lot. I mean, there's the access to resources part, which is, I mean, just in general, the stat I know is on average, 1 in 4 people experience mental health condition in a given year. And on average, people wait 6 to 10 years between the onset of symptoms and seeking help. Mm-hmm. And I know That's I was one time. Of those people. Yeah. Part of that is access to resources, which is a octopus of a problem, yes. whether it's they don't know about it or they can't
Money,
afford it.
That's right.
They, you know,
or
they're
live
like,
in a rural community.
Yes,
with
absolutely.
Limited resources,
yeah. And then the other part of it is definitely stigma. And stigma, you know, it's deep set in our culture and definitely in different areas. It looks different. And
it's deep set in the family culture too.
Absolutely.
Like how many students do I see who do not want their parents to know they're coming to counseling?
Mm-hmm.
They pay for it out of pocket because of that.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, if we have to have any kind of communication with them outside of here, they ask us not to send that to their permanent home.
Yeah.
Because their family just thinks that counseling is stupid.
Yeah.
Or why don't you, you know, why aren't you stronger than that? I've just heard all kinds of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And generationally, you know, like, you know, their parents might not have gotten counseling or
mm-hmm.
whatever, and they just, you know, they didn't do it. So they're like, why do you have to do that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that culture is definitely changing, but not changing fast enough. So
I've got so many more questions. We've got a lot of things to talk about. I'm going to check the email and see if we have some email questions. If you have an email question that you want to send, send to us. The email address is brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about how HELMI has helped to change the culture here on the UA campus. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hey, this is Evan.
And Chris.
And Jordan.
From the Doctors and the Lawyers. Keep on moving.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and tonight my guest is HELMI Henkin. She is a graduate of UA who works at Brewer Ports Children's Center at UA. And we're talking about changing the culture of the campus to be more understanding, more supportive of mental health issues. So
mm-hmm.
here's my next big question. Why do you think it's so difficult to change the culture of mental health on some college campuses? I can guess on this one. You know, I can guess a little bit, but on most college campuses, is it the same old thing?
Yeah, I think it's definitely dependent on, because stigma, like we were talking about, has so many levels. It can be familial, it can be cultural, it can be regional. So the way that we talk about mental health here definitely differed from the way we talked about it where I was from. And
yes.
I mean, part of that was also our experience with suicidal contagion. So it can be difficult because there are these different levels and people maybe don't feel comfortable trying to, you know, break those levels or break the status quo.
I'm curious, how, in your opinion, how is it different? Now, don't give me the whole, like, 5-day synopsis, but how is it different in the way we look at mental health here in the South, or here in Alabama, as opposed to where you're from California, like specifics? Give me some interesting
specifics. One thing I noticed when I got here was people, I mean, there's the Southern attitude that people will put on a brave face. They won't really talk about what's going on with them. And where I'm from, people are kind of more open about that.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, maybe contributes that people are uncomfortable showing that they may be struggling with something, even with their close friends. Hard to break those traditions of stigma.
Did you, when you first got here, you know, if you were more open to talking about your lived experiences, mm-hmm. as you call it, do you think it, like, scared people a little bit? Or I don't know, intimidated? I don't know what the word is.
It definitely, it depends. I think I'm very open about my lived experience. Yeah. I'll talk about it with whomever. Some people, if they have that ingrained stigma, they will isolate themselves from me because, for example, I live with bipolar disorder. Uh-huh. And so bipolar disorder often in the media is portrayed as either these monsters who will destroy their relationship without remorse, or they're portrayed as these manic pixie dream girls who, you know, just are all over the place. Yes. And so people hear the name of one of my diagnoses and they kind of assume that and they try and isolate themselves from me. But, you know, most people.
Well, that's when your struggle really starts to educate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
To educate them. And either they isolate themselves and it's their loss.
Yeah.
Or either they get closer to you and they learn from what's going on.
Yeah. And I think another part, I've had a lot of people tell me being open about it makes them feel better about.
Yes, yes.
Because they know somebody else and they see how I'm living with it, and it maybe gives them hope that they can find a balance.
Yes.
Or it gives, they make, like you were saying, it makes them feel less crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, 1 in 4. That's a quarter of the population. And I feel like it's probably more than that. But
those are 1 in 4 reported.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yes,
and
it
so
always is more than that.
Yeah. So it's more common than people think. And it's just, it's not something to be ashamed of at all.
What about, you know, do you think the perception here at UA has changed?
Oh, absolutely. In the past 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think several things have contributed to that. For example, the walk on Sunday.
Thank you for the pub. and I'm going to read a little more details about that and how you can register. But she's talking about the walk for suicide prevention and, you know, to help people become more aware.
Yeah. And the proceeds, the donations benefit American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. When I was a freshman, the walk was really small and it has gotten more support. I mean, it's gotten support from the Greeks after their high profile suicides. It's huge now, and that's been really encouraging. I feel like the university has also gotten much better at talking about the resources. So the counseling center, we have a crisis text line keyword that I think could be boosted a little more.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, you can text BAMA, B-A-M-A, to 741-741 to be anonymously connected to a trained crisis counselor at any time for free. I was once a trained crisis counselor, but I've gotten a little busy for that, so I've fallen off the wagon. Ask, Listen, Refer.
Ask, Listen, Refer. It's a prevention program that we provide.
Yeah, and...
Or QPR training also.
Yes, QPR Question, training.
Persuade and refer.
An IFC representative told me once that they were either trying or they already implemented having all their pledges complete Ask, Listen, Refer so they could be there for each other. And so that's a huge culture change, just the amount of suicide prevention stuff that UA tries to put on.
Well, and I think also what I have noticed in the years I've worked here, it seems like there are more students. I don't know if this is good or bad. I see it as good. But there are more students coming to the university with therapy experience.
Yes.
You know, like they have been, I call it therapized, you know, they have been therapized and they come, you know, maybe they've come from California and they've had a therapist in California that they saw in high school. So it's not a big deal for them to continue going to counseling if they need it for maintenance. It's just not a big deal. And you're right. When their friends or their roommates or their, you know, whoever hear about them coming, then it normalizes it for them.
Absolutely. So
that's a big. So what else? The walk on Sunday, the
just the stuff that they put on the resources, publicizing the resources, and I think also the hiring of Dr. Perez was a big step.
It showed
that the university is trying to prioritize student health and well-being, and he is really invested in it. And the stuff, the ways that he showed initiative and was proactive about it last year, having listening sessions with NAMI, being open to meeting with students, founding that student wellness council.
He has a background.
Mm-hmm.
He has a background in counseling, in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
He was a former counseling center director.
Yeah.
At Georgia Tech, I think.
Yeah, so, I think that's true.
What about, have you seen an increase, and maybe you don't know about this, but have you seen an increase in funding? Do you know anything about that?
I would not know about that.
I'm just asking, just to see if you knew. But I just wonder, you know, do they've hired Dr. Perez, but how much funding is going to go toward improving services?
Yeah, that was one thing I was hoping to bring up. I mean, because the Counseling Center is an amazing resource, but with the student body increasing exponentially, I feel like a lot of the campus resources haven't had time to catch up, and the infrastructure is not able to serve all the students that you want
That's true. And before we went on air, I told you that fortunately, we have never had to go to a wait list, which mm-hmm. some campuses, some bigger universities, some comparable universities have had to go to a waiting list, but we have avoided that, thank goodness. But there is probably a 2-week, you know, period. Like if you called today to ask for a screening appointment, you'd have to wait 2 weeks to get in. I mean, we could go ahead and make the appointment, but it wouldn't mm-hmm. be for a couple of weeks. Of course, we always have the walk-in availability during the day between 8 and 5. If you're having a crisis, you can always walk into the counseling center. And we have after-hours on-call therapists. So that's good. But fortunately, we have not had to go to a waiting list. I mentioned earlier, we have 17 licensed professional therapists, clinical psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, licensed professional counselors, along with 3 graduate students who help us out and see students also. But really, and we are accredited, but to be accredited, you are required to have 1 counselor per 1,500 to 2,000 students. So figure that up. We're not there.
Right.
So we're always needing more help. Mm-hmm. You know, so I feel what you're saying, especially this time of year. October and April are our busiest months just because it's mid-semester.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all, but fortunately, with our executive director's guidance and leadership, we have been able to add a therapist every year that I can remember. And I think we have an opening right now.
Wow.
FYI for anybody listening and qualified. So that would, I mean, so, you know, we're, that's where we've grown. And that's
right.
Where I have seen a change mm-hmm. too, which is good.
Yeah, definitely.
What about, you know, this is an obvious question. Why should campus professionals partner with students on this issue? What's the benefit?
Well, students obviously have the lived experience on campus. They know what problems students face.
You're in the trenches,
you know,
is what I always
yeah,
say.
What their needs are. But like my experience was, we don't really have the pull. And so campus professionals, they know the people to contact to make things happen. They know what ways to most productively, you know, catalyze these initiatives.
Yes.
So they have the power, they have the pull, and we have the experience. And so campus professionals making decisions on the well-being or mental health of students and on these resources using student input mm-hmm. is the best way to make these resources accessible to students and also relevant to them.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it helps motivate them, you know, and I think it gives confidence too, you know.
Yes.
I don't know how your confidence changed over the years that you were here, but being involved with these organizations and taking leadership roles builds your confidence.
Absolutely. Feel so empowered to be able to make a change. And by partnering with campus professionals, you can feel like your voices are being heard.
What about, you know, did you say when you got here as a freshman, when it was a couple of years before Dr. Perez was actually hired, right?
Yeah, he got hired my senior year.
Oh,
so
wow. So okay, that's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Before he was hired, how difficult was it to engage administrators?
This will probably
be my last show.
I mean,
be careful what
NAMI
you say.
NAMI UA did not have much success at all. I mean, we would have our mental health monologues, and then each year we would create this petition with various requests, whether it be
yes.
increased funding to the counseling center, you know,
ridiculous
promote.
Ridiculous demands,
just like,
right?
Right. Increased funding to the counseling center, maybe promote the crisis text line keyword more, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, the blurb at the end of the syllabus.
Oh.
We wanted a blurb on the syllabus about mental health resources on campus. I think we told Dr. Perez about that, so that might not be in the works. Don't quote me on that.
That would be cool, though.
That would be really nice. And so... I don't know if we just didn't have the right contacts, but we would just try to email administrators. They would never get back to us, set up meetings. And it was just so hard.
Frustrating.
It was very frustrating. It just kind of made me feel like on-campus advocacy was pointless, and that's part of what catalyzed me and motivated me to get involved off-campus.
Well, and it also probably made you feel like there's still that stigma there.
Absolutely. And
because
so,
if you can't get past the administration,
mm-hmm.
or if you can't get the support of the administration, how is this ever going to work?
Absolutely. And it's gotten a lot better now, and administration is definitely more open to hearing our concerns now and doing something about them. Yeah, thank God.
Yes.
And, you know, I was able to be involved in both and be a leader in both and participate in MHA's Collegiate Mental Health Innovation Council and just talk about the progress we've made. And it's very inspiring to have made so much progress in my 4 years, you know, to see the culture change so much.
Did some of the events that you guys had, were they well attended by students? How did you market that?
So, for example, Mental Health Monologues is an event we have every year.
It's still going on?
I hope. It's every March, so you'd have to ask the current NAMI UA exec about that.
Yeah.
But we've had it every year for a long time. Basically, students, staff, faculty can submit anonymous monologues about their lived experience with mental health conditions, and then we have people perform them. And so generally it's a very well attended event. We have psychology professors offer extra credit or get it worth a Greek point, or people just come because they're interested in learning about us or learning about lived mental health experience.
Yeah.
And so generally we partner each monologue with kind of a description either from y'all or last year I wrote them about what the mental health condition is like, what it, you know, and just kind of encourage people to get help, provide information about resources or advocacy opportunities.
That's amazing. You know, when I first started here several years ago, it was very hard to get people to attend events. And that's why I asked you that question. It's very hard.
Oh.
And we would go sometimes to whatever was scheduled by RAs in the dorms, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And there would be like either nobody showed up or one or two people would show up, or you would have to kind of like bribe people with pizza.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is fine. I'm all for bribing people with food. But it was so impossible. And that's how I've noticed it changing, is the events that we go to now and we are speaking at those events, it's well attended.
Yeah, that's definitely something I've noticed too. I have a lot of campus leadership experience. I was an officer in 12 organizations my senior year, not something I recommend. I had to schedule in time to breathe, basically.
Yeah.
But like, definitely, I just feel like the general student, the baseline is apathy. And so plenty of students are happy just what they're doing, where they're at. They don't feel, you know, needed or motivated to go to these events. And
right.
So it's kind of the same students going to all the events.
Yeah.
And so that's one problem that campus organizations have been trying to tackle, is how to motivate this basically 80% of the campus population to go to events.
Well, it's not, you know, there are some topics though.
Yeah.
That we talk about when we go and talk at these events or present at these events that are not fun to talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, suicide is not fun to
Absolutely.
Talk about. Depression is not, bipolar is not fun to
No.
talk about. It's just not something, unless you have a invested interest or you have that diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
who wants to go to that?
Yeah, yeah. And we have this, I mean, I have the same problem even trying to schedule ending the silence programs at high schools. I've had so many high schools just not even reply to me. A lot of people don't see the need to go mm-hmm. for mental health events.
Well, and I think sometimes, tell me if I'm wrong, I think sometimes people who are uneducated about mental health issues, they are afraid to have mental health professionals come and talk about certain topics because they're afraid it will cause people to do act.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a huge misconception on what suicide contagion entails. And of
exactly.
course, there are safe ways to report and talk about suicide. For example, saying died by suicide instead of committed suicide, mm-hmm. because suicide is not criminal.
Right.
And it's just the
terminology, the language.
Yes. It's the mm-hmm. it's the effect of depression. It's
right.
not, you know, it's not a shameful
it's
thing.
It's not a punishment.
So, and so, for example, when we had this suicide contagion in the news, they wouldn't say student jumped in front of a train. They would say pedestrian hit by train.
Right.
And when you're reporting
right.
about any suicide, Anthony Bourdain, Kate right. Spade, what have you, you don't put the method in there because it will make people want to do it. Yes. And it's perfectly fine to talk about suicide. It's actually better if you think a friend is struggling instead of beating around the bush. Studies show if you're like, hey, are you thinking about killing yourself or something like that? That's better than beating around the bush, because then you can do the crisis assessment. There's this ladder that they teach us about, you know, thinking about assessing ideation, a plan, means, that's and right. then a timeline.
That's right. Intent.
Intent. Too. There you go.
Real quick before we take a break, I want to talk about gender differences too. In a recent article, I always do a little bit of research before I have somebody on the show.
Right.
So I at least think I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But in one of the articles I read, it was reported that when it comes to seeking professional help, men face more obstacles and consequences from a combination of stigma and cultural expectations. Do you have any suggestions on how to improve the culture so as to help more men seek counseling?
Yeah, and I think that's something that's been in the news a lot and something I've talked with my friends a lot about recently. I mean, I think a lot of the added stigma for men is this toxic masculinity that they're brought up thinking that they're not allowed to cry, to be a man. And yes. so instead of learning how to properly or healthily process their emotions, they don't learn at all, or they learn to cope with them through anger and violence. And so just trying to raise boys and men to know that it's okay to cry and it's okay to talk about emotions instead of trying to isolate themselves or act out. And I mean, for people who are grown, it's just about having these conversations and just ending the stigma in general, letting them know it's not a shameful thing to talk about, letting right. them know that help is out there and they deserve help.
And it may be only a one-time thing.
Absolutely.
Like, you just may need to talk to somebody who can be objective. I have mm-hmm. students tell me that all the time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I could replace men in this sentence or in this question with culture, because I've had several different cultures,
mm-hmm.
whether it's African American, Asian, you know, Indian,
mm-hmm.
who they're taught, you know, not to talk about this,
yeah.
not to talk about mental health, or, you know, they just feel so defeated. It really affects their self-esteem.
And, yeah.
Or they're from a very religious culture.
Absolutely.
And the religious part of them, you know, they are being told by their family members to just pray about it and it will go away. Or, you know, if you were a stronger Christian, then that would take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad to see some people come in and basically say that that's not working for me.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're going to take another short break and then we'll come back for our last segment. I'm going to remind you again, if you have a question, you can email the question for me or Helmy. And we're going to talk about your name when we come back. I've been meaning to ask you about that. So if you want to email a question, it's brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters here on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hi, this is Mary Alice with the High Divers, and you're listening to WVUA.
Hey, this is Naked Giants. You're listening to WVUA Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and I am with Helmy Henkin. We are talking about changing the culture of mental health on college campuses, in particular UA's campus. And Helmy, I had to ask her about her name, and I thought in one of the articles I was researching about her that it mentions being from Scandinavia, and she tells me that she is Finnish.
Yep.
It sounds weird to say
my
that.
Mom's family is from Finland, so I'm a dual citizen. I grew up pretty close to my Finnish background. It was definitely influenced my upbringing a lot. And
your mom came here, though, to have you, so you were born in the
United
States.
My dad's American.
Because the healthcare was better, of course.
It was actually, I think it was just that, like, my family's kind of based here now, and it was just it was easy as my mom saying, hey, I was born. And so, like, her child was able to get finished citizenship.
But you're going back to Helsinki.
Yeah, Christmas. For Christmas. I'm so excited.
I'm so jealous. I asked Hilmi about sleigh rides because that I see that a lot, like, on Pinterest and Facebook. And she tells me there's, like, what amusement park? What are you talking
so,
about?
So, basically, Finland lays claim to Santa Claus.
Yes.
If you go to
what
a place.
What do you call him?
Joulupukki.
Okay, whatever.
So if you go to Rovaniemi, which is in Lapland, Santa Claus has an amusement park. There are reindeer farms you can go to.
Oh.
The whole you can see the northern lights, the whole shebang.
The northern lights, I was going to ask you about.
I've never seen them. I really want to.
How far is that from Helsinki, though?
Several hours.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. By train.
So you still have lots of family over there?
Oh, yeah. My entire mom's side. I speak Finnish. I try and watch Finnish TV and listen to Finnish radio online because I got to keep it up somehow. I went to Finnish school when I was younger, but yeah, try and read the Finnish news.
What about, there is a book, actually, there's several books, and you mentioned that when people from the Scandinavian countries moved over to the United States back in whenever, 1800s, they settled in Minnesota, so that's where a lot of, and I told her, I said, yeah, I watched the Golden Girls, I know about St. Olaf, I know the language and all that, yeah. But there are a series of books out. Have you ever seen the books about how to live like a Finnish person or how to live like a Swedish person? Have you ever seen those?
I've heard of that book. I've never read it, though.
They are so cute, but I'm getting off on a tangent here. So let's get back to what we were talking about, what the topic of the show is, changing the culture here on UA's campus. And we were finishing up kind of talking about how if students come from different backgrounds, not just male or female, but different backgrounds, depending on, and you know, you mentioned in the break about the Finnish background with regards to mental health. Can you talk a little bit about their philosophy? Is it anything similar to like Asian culture or African American culture or even, you know, Hispanic culture with regards to how they view mental health?
I think it's definitely becoming less stigmatized there as well. We live in a very dark place. There is a lot of depression.
I forgot about that, yes.
A lot of Finnish music is really, really sad. there's a high prevalence of substance abuse and stuff.
Is there a high prevalence of suicide?
Mm-hmm, as well. Yeah. But, I mean, I just feel like compared to here, it's more cold. I mean, Finnish people might write in and say I'm wrong, but with my experience, I mean, my family is pretty open about it. If someone in our family is living with depression, I had experience with some family members, you know, who came from before.
Mm-hmm.
It was more with their age and what generation they were from than our Finnish culture that they weren't really comfortable, you know, admitting,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had a mental health condition or whatnot. But yeah, and about Asian cultures, I actually worked at a psychiatric hospital in Bali for a summer, which was an
incredible. You are killing me. How did you get that gig?
It's through a program called SLV Global. They do mental health placements in Bali and Sri Lanka. I was on the pilot Bali program, which was a whole adventure in and of itself. I used to do, you know.
All I can think about is Eat, Pray, Love.
I used to do presentations on it when I was in undergrad. And so a lot of people in that psychiatric hospital, their families had expelled them, ostracized them, because in some Asian cultures, your mental health conditions are seen as demons.
Yes.
And if you can't expel them or exorcise them, then
like it was
something's
here,
wrong with you.
Some time ago.
Absolutely.
Same
and there are still, you know, Christian cultures are face the belief that. And so, you know, I think it's all about talking about it, talking about its prevalence. That's how I turned my family around.
Was it hard to get people help in Indonesia? Just the resources?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, some of their resources actually were, I'd say, better than ones we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in an institution for children with ID, and some of the stuff they had there was really awesome. The sensory rooms they had and a lot of this stuff was state-funded as well. They had schools for people with various disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome to see just kind of the emphasis and priority they put on their people's well-being. And obviously the culture is different and the amount of resources they're able to provide is different, but it was really inspiring to be able to connect with these people cross-culturally and learn the differences between the cultures and also the different resources and even how we approach mental health in different countries.
Right. Do you think, this is a yes or no question, do you think that there needs to be an institutionalized process for receiving and acting on student input about mental health concerns? You know, where it's just like set in stone kind of thing.
I have a friend actually who's working on a startup, and he's been talking to me about it. I've been like beta testing it for him. And
is this,
I mean,
the first time you've talked about it in public?
In public, probably.
This is cool. Okay.
And it's kind of like the thing UA has set up where, but basically, he's trying to partner with schools around the country, and it allows students to, you know, it kind of takes the intake process, that step out of the equation for counseling centers, and it gives them resources to kind of in the interim before the waiting period. So whether it's articles or TED Talks or, you know, whatever, journals or, you know, daily check-ins.
What about teletherapy?
He probably is not
is
able to do that
another...
on his app, but I think telemedicine is really important and something that is an underutilized research and would really help people on this campus. But that's a thing that a lot of campuses have done too, is just doing surveys to try and figure out the what students want, what the culture is.
And that was another question I had for you. Like, what do you think? You know, because some universities have developed surveys asking students. I mean, how can we do that? Why are we not doing that, in your opinion? Is it just the lack of time and effort and money or staff even?
Yeah, the thing about surveys is just, it's really, just in general, this is part of the reason it's hard to get people to go to things is how do you reach all these students, you know? Do they all check their email? You can't go in the Ferg and reach everybody. And so that's the thing about having, I do believe there should be some sort of like system to help people get the mental health help they need on campuses, whether it's they fill up the survey and then they are, through my friend's startup, they have resources until they're able to get that counseling center appointment, or whether there are other resources put in place or recommendations to resources in the community as well. So, you know, the counseling center isn't...
At the counseling center, we have started using a resource called TAO. Have you heard of it?
No.
Yeah, it stands for Therapy Assisted Online. And a therapist out of the University of Florida actually developed and created it, and it's fantastic. It has a lot of resources. And for instance, if you come to the counseling center, and let's say we do regular counseling and you're not at risk for harming yourself or anybody else, sometimes we will actually kind of assign a TAO project to them. It's not homework or anything like that, but if somebody wants to work on themselves outside of a counseling session, it is a wonderful tool.
Absolutely. And I think so, yeah.
All kinds of information, but all kinds of strategies and interventions that you can practice at home.
Yes, absolutely.
And then when we come back, when you come back in, then we go over that with you. It's not like we just assign it to you.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, just... I try and tell people just even the strategies of cognitive behavioral therapy, et cetera, are helpful to use. I mean, obviously, I'm not a licensed therapist, but if I see
one. I know you do.
If I see somebody and I can recognize, oh, that's absolute thinking, I won't be like, hey, you know, I don't have the right terminology for it or anything. But I say, what helps me is keeping a journal of these thoughts and writing down rational reasons why they're not true, stuff that they might tell you.
Well,
in therapy.
And I think it encourages them to know, like we talked about earlier, that you've tried this and that's what worked for you.
Yep.
So there, some people are so desperate that they will try to do anything.
Yeah.
Or they'll, you know, of course they'll take your suggestion.
Yeah.
I mentioned in your introduction that you also work at Brewer Porch Children's Center. Can you tell the listeners what you do there and what that's
like? Oh, my gosh. So basically, for those who don't know, Brewer Porch is a mental health facility for children and adolescents with various mental health conditions or behavioral problems. There are different programs there that you can read about online. And basically what I do is I help facilitate the daily activities for the children, whether it's going to school or on the weekends. We do various groups, even going on outings with them, just kind of being there for them.
Ages, you said ages 7
yeah, generally,
to 11?
Yeah, generally the program I'm with is generally 7 to 11. We have kids anywhere from, you know, pre-K to middle school, depending on the program.
And the children that you work with, do they live there?
Yeah, I work in one of the residential treatment programs.
How long do they live there? I'm curious.
It really depends. I mean, there are different programs, of course, so there's a shorter-term program where it might be a matter of months.
Does it depend on the progress that they make?
Right? Yeah, it depends on that, too, and just it depends on a lot of things, but I absolutely love it. My kids mean the world to me.
I bet they love you, too. But
yeah, some of them call me Mom.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh,
but
gosh.
I don't know.
One of the things we touched on right before we went on air, and I said I was going to mention this, so I want to make sure I get this in here. You established so many things when you were here on campus. How are your efforts sustainable for the long term? Like, how can you, A, ensure that students' mental health leadership is sustained on campus year to year?
Well, that was actually
hard.
Just in general, being gone, watching campus organizations that I created or helped with struggle, that's just a huge problem that a lot of campus organizations have, is setting up that infrastructure for leadership to continue.
Because it's just a turnover.
Yes, absolutely.
Turnover.
And in terms of mental health, like we talked about, I didn't find another me, you know? I mean, there were people passionate about it, but I wasn't able to motivate anybody to go out into the community like I did. So it was just, I was unable to find somebody with my level of motivation to help it, which I think maybe my campus organization will struggle because of that. I think with Dr. Perez, it's going to be better because he's going to need these mental health organizations to sustain, to be able to continue his work. And I think each year, the incoming class becomes more motivated to get involved. I mean, last year, I got so many more emails from freshmen.
Wow.
It reminded me of me. I was one of those freshmen. Like, I was on the Source website the summer before I got here emailing everybody. And there are just finding those motivated people and keeping them motivated, building the infrastructure in your organization to facilitate a healthy transition. Because if your constitution does not, you know, allow for that.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, Hilmi, you're unique. You are unique. No, in a positive way.
Thank you.
And there'll just be every so often when someone as passionate as you comes along. I mean, that's why you were named one of the 15 students in the country who helped change the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you really have made an impact, you know, listening to you talk.
Thank you.
I just really appreciate you being on the show.
I'm honored to be asked to be here. I listen to the show all the time.
Oh, do you? Well, I may ask you to be on the show again in the future.
I'm here all year.
You know?
If anyone reading this is interested in, you know, contacting me, you can hit me up on Facebook.
Yeah. And I'm going to give some information. Let me do this now about the suicide walk. First of all, I want to say, don't forget, our shows are recorded and podcasted, and they're put on audioboom.com. Just type in Brain Matters, and you'll find some of our past shows. There's also a link to Audio Boom on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. Helmi and I have been talking about the suicide walk, but all this week, October 1st through the 7th, is the University of Alabama Suicide Awareness Week. And during this week, there'll be a lot of activities held around campus daily to promote prevention and awareness of suicide while also promoting mental well-being. And as the anchor event of UA Suicide Awareness Week, the Counseling Center will host the 9th annual Tuscaloosa Out of the Darkness Community Walk, which will be held on Sunday. It's this Sunday, October 7th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Ferguson Center Plaza. Usually there's speakers there. Sometimes there's students who have been directly impacted by suicide, and we have giveaways and a lot of helpful information, and then we take a walk around the quad. I think it's two times, actually, to raise money. And the goal this year is $40,000. So I don't know where we stand on that, but I'll find out more about it, you know, at the week's end. But this is to fight mental illness. So if you're still interested about walking, you can register for the walk at afsp.org/Tuscaloosa. And you can also learn about the Counseling Center prevention programs. We do a lot of prevention programs. We mention Ask, Listen, and Refer. And we also do a prevention program called QPR that I mentioned, and it stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer. And we're always going out and talking to classes about all kinds of stuff. But if you want more information, go to counseling.sa.ua.edu/counseling/suicide. prevention. Prevention. Right. Well, I totally messed that up. Hopefully, just go to the Counseling Center website. So we hope to see you there, you know, this Sunday. I hope we have a good turnout. In the past few years, we've really had
record
numbers, actually.
Absolutely.
As always, I want to thank people who have made this show possible. Dr. Lee Keyes, he's our executive director. Terry Sickers from the Office of Student Media. My production assistant tonight is Catherine Howell, and my colleagues at the Counseling Center, the WVUA staff, and, of course, my guest tonight, Helmy Hinken. Join us next week. I'm so excited about this show because I am obsessed with this phenomenon. It's a YouTube phenomenon called ASMR. I'll tell you more about that next week if you'll tune in, but it's just fascinating. Thanks again for listening to Brain Matters tonight on 90.7 The Capstone. Good night.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.